Good evening and welcome to this very special episode of Cut the Clutter with the Prince Editor-in-Chief, Shekhar Gupta. As Cut the Clutter marks 1000 episode, we want to extend our gratitude to our viewers and subscribers, not just in India, but across the world. And as promised, we have with us Shekhar Gupta, who will answer questions from our subscribers as well as our viewers. So let's begin this very special edition of Cut the Clutter.
And thank you for joining us on this 1000th edition, Neelam Pandey. Neelam Pandey is one of our senior most editors in our stellar political team, and she's just started a new political show.
Yes.
I think the next one you will see maybe by the time this one is out, or maybe a few hours after that. And that will be on a very fascinating but the complex issue of Bhumihar caste politics. When we talk of caste politics, we say Brahmin, Thakur, then OBCs, Dalits, but Bhumihars get missed out. But in Bihar, every caste counts.
Right.
So she has her first show about the complexities of the Bhumihar caste and how that is worrying the BJP. So I'm not the only one who declutters things for you or on the print. Cut the Clutter, of course, has now been around for 1000 episodes. Thank you very much, all of you, for staying with it. It started small, but it has picked up.
Yes.
And as we go along, I will also tell you how the idea came up in conversation with Neelam. And there are some questions also. But let me tell you that in 1000 episodes, we've had more than 25 crore views.
Wow.
And in English language, it's not bad. 25 crore views in 1000 episodes. And we've averaged upwards of 1000 responses to each episode. So that means more than 1 million responses, which tells us that one, that okay, we can boast and say that our engagement levels are very good, but it also shows that our viewers are very sharp and very smart, and quite often they catch mistakes that I make.
Yes.
Because I think on my feet and I don't speak from a script. So thank you very much for catching me. And whenever I notice one of those, I make comments, and I'm very grateful to you, especially for that.
So we will start with some of the questions that we have received from our viewers. Prakar Khandelwal, he's congratulated us. Thank you so much. And he wants to know, which is the one episode or topic of CTC which you had to learn about or delve deeper, or something that you were completely not aware of?
Well, there was a whole bunch of them done on coronavirus. Of course, I knew that there are viruses, and I knew some basic viruses, but almost 99% of what we spoke about over the course of more than a year, when we did so many episodes on COVID, each one was learning.
Right.
Each one was involved a great deal of learning, because coronavirus research, also science, reached another level. And this wasn't just about science. This was about our lives.
Mm.
So we had to learn a lot and understand a lot. It was imperative that we should be as accurate as possible. But again, you were dependent also on what was state of the art.
Mm.
What is it that you understood of a situation by then? So many of the things that we understood at that point, at any particular point, changed going ahead. So it was also like shooting at a moving target. So that was the most challenging thing. And then there are other things. For example, there are countries that we might know nothing about. Now, Moldavia.
Right.
Who knew about Moldavia? It's only now when Putin's people said that we want a corridor through southern Ukraine into Transnistria. What is Transnistria? Moldavia, at least, naam to suna hai. Transnistria, who knows? So that is completely new learnings. Or learnings about the war in Ethiopia, which is
right.
One of the nastiest wars going on in the world right now, except that it's Africa, so people don't care so much about it. Some of the biggest genocides are taking place there. Or Mali, or the Sahel region, right? So all that, in fact, I am grateful to viewers of Cut the Clutter, because you've all kept on coming. That's given me the impetus to continue doing it 5 days a week, sometimes even 6 days a week.
Yes.
In fact, initially it was 6 days a week, because if you had not shown this much interest, you would have saved me a lot of hard work. But I know a lot of you watch, a lot of you wait for it. So I also, every time I want to shirk, I think of you, and I can say I can't let down our viewers, our readers, you are wonderful people.
And we hope you will continue to watch. Another member wants to know.
Please take a membership.
Yes.
We respond to our members and we are building a whole bunch of new benefits for our members. Please stay with us for the next few weeks and you will see these benefits rolling out.
And all these details are available on our website. It's a very simple process, so please do subscribe. One of our members wants to know, over the years, has it become easier running an online news outlet, and is being an editor of a newspaper more difficult or a digital media house?
Well, I can tell you, when I was editor of a newspaper, I was also the editor of its online presence.
Right.
And
right.
The Indian Express Group has a very strong online presence. But this technology moves very fast. So this technology has moved greatly. And what I have realized after setting this up, in the process of setting up the print, is one, that that technology is a big enabler for us. So entry barriers in our business have come down by not a ratio of 1:10, but even less. So if it cost you 1,000 crores to set a media organization earlier to build the kind of audiences that we have, today it takes 50 crores to do that. So that's a big change. Also, the sheer pleasure of building a new newsroom. To do that, and newsrooms are built when people find audience quickly. So if you launch a print newspaper or a TV channel, it will take you forever build audience of the size that we have built right now. We have more than 20 million visitors to our website, mostly in English language. We are still expanding our Hindi offering. So that tells you that there are benefits here and there are learnings here. And I can tell you that I am learning something new every day. So you know that old saying, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, right? Old dogs can also learn new tricks.
And Anand Kulkarni wants to know, what changes can we see at the Prince YouTube channel in the next 3 years?
See, what is modern journalism? All of you are smart people. You know duniya mein kya hua, kahan hua, kisne kiya, right? You know that Ukraine and Russia are fighting. You know the West is on Ukraine's side. You know that Chinese are somewhere there with Russia, etc. All of that you know. Now, if something happens in that war, you will know. So what is it that journalism does now? So when we all went to journalism school, or if you read definition of news anywhere, you will be told that it is 5 W's and 1 H.
Yes.
What, where, who, why, when, and H is how. So what, where, who, when. This all of you know now. So we are left with how
and the why.
And we add one more. Why? And we had one more, what next? So that is what our journalism is all about. And going ahead, you will see a lot more of that on our YouTube channel. Having said that, you will also see us filling up the platter a little bit more. So you might see a bit more of back of the book, more features. You might see some sport, which we have been ignoring so far, which is a crime in my view. I started my life as a sports correspondent, so I can't let down that area. And also you will see some bit of cinema, or what I call culture. And you know what, Neelam, it has taken us 3.5 years to get to the 1,000th episode, because after all there's 1 a day and 5 a week,
right?
So it'll take us another 3.5 years to get to the next 1,000
milestone.
So we are going to have not just one special episode for the 1,000, but two. Aapne suna hai na, my birthday comes just once a year. I wish I could have two. So we'll have two birthdays, 2,000th episode specials. So the second one we'll put out this Sunday, where we talk about some of the highlights out of our episodes done so far, and a little bit about how the idea developed and our journey over this period.
So now we are moving on to some economy-related questions. Aditya wants to know, on one hand, we are seeing record collection of GST in the month of April. And on the other hand, we are seeing inflation, you know, that's reaching around 7% and forex reserves of countries decreasing. So what is your thoughts on the current economic situation?
Look, economics is complex, like much else. Economics is a science. I don't have basic education in economics, but I'm learning all the time. Now, one thing that you must understand with economics is that 2 and 2 does not make 4. Because the conclusions that seem obvious to us are not so obvious. For example, if inflation goes up, GST collection will go up because GST is on the price of a product. So if the price goes up, the tax also goes up because tax is a percentage.
Right.
So if the price is 100 rupees, tax is 28 rupees, right? But if the price is 200 rupees, the same thing will cost you, the same thing will get you a tax of 56 rupees because it's 28% at the top slab. So because inflation is rising, there's no contradiction between rising inflation and rising GST collections. If anything, there is a direct correlation.
What are your thoughts that the forex reserve of the country
forex
is decreasing?
Forex reserves are falling for... See, first of all, forex reserves, just as they rise, they also fall. So to think that forex reserves will not fall, they'll only keep rising. It may happen for a country like China, which is mainly an export-oriented economy. But a country which generally has a deficit in its trade, forex reserves rise as well as fall. In China's case also, now they must have fallen. I haven't studied it. They must have fallen. Because what happens to countries when they have forex reserves? So countries don't keep those reserves in their pocket or in their currency or in their banks. By definition, forex reserves have to be kept in forex, right? As simple as that. So most countries keep their forex reserves in, or most of their reserves in dollar, because US dollar is the reserve currency of the world. Now, how do you keep in the dollars? You buy US bonds, US treasury bonds, which give you almost nothing by way of interest. Now they might give you some interest because interest rates are turning positive. There's inflation in the US also, but you keep your money there. Then you balance it. You keep some in Japanese yen, some in British pounds,
right,
some in euro, and a bunch of it in gold. So if the gold price goes down, then that part of your reserves will come down. If the gold price goes up, that part of your reserves goes up. Similarly, if the American bonds come down in value, then the money, the reserves that you have in US bonds, they lose value. So right now, Indian reserves have fallen by about $45 billion.
Right.
They've gone below $600 billion. So one reason is that over the past 3-4 months, a lot of the FIIs and others have pulled out their money from Indian markets. They've pulled out because earlier they were getting no interest in American markets and foreign markets, but particularly American markets. But now, because they have inflation there, they're getting interest there because Fed has upped the interest rates. So they are pulling money out because they feel safer. Some of it's happened because of that. And some of it's happened because India has a large part of its reserves sitting in US dollar bonds. And those bonds have lost value. So what happens in bond markets is, it's again my learning and I keep telling myself because it sounds so counterintuitive, that as interest rates go up on bonds, the value of bonds comes down. So interest rates are going up, so the value of bonds is coming down. That's the reason I say that even the Chinese reserves, I'm sure, have come down in their current value because Chinese have $1.5 trillion worth of American bonds.
Well, we've received a number of questions. I'll continue with some more from our members. Raghav Khurana wants to know, do you believe we are at the changing world order from USA to China, especially with rising Saudi rial using yuan as a petrocurrency?
Well, first of all, I do not see rial or the yuan replacing the dollar. Because just ask yourself an honest question. Everybody says that, oh, Americans have confiscated or detained Russia's dollars, Russia's exchange, Russia's foreign exchange reserves in dollar. Americans have done it. And though this is a warning for the entire world that Americans can do it for you, do it to you. So don't put your money in American dollar. Put their money in yuan. So if the Americans can do it, the Chinese, who will trust the Chinese? So this whole idea that the yuan will now become a reserve currency of the world, before that, the Chinese have to before that, convince the world that the Chinese have some bit of honesty in their heads or in their hearts when it comes to their own national interest, because they put that ahead of everything else. And more importantly, Chinese first will have to become a more convincing, a more comforting presence to their own neighbors.
Right.
China is today a menace to almost all its neighbors. So this is not going to happen. This is all theoretical, faltu talk. this rial and yuan, euro in any case is struggling, right? It's not going to happen.
So that's a very definite answer. It's not happening. Another member wants to know, can you state three positives and negatives from Modi government, you know, 8 years of their government, and if you can compare it with the UPS tenure?
Well, I think that is almost an essay, or that's a national interest article, and you've given me an idea. I might do it one of these days. But I think if you look at off the top of my head, the positives, the most important positive is that our economic stability has not only remained, but it's become stronger, because there were lots of worries, even in my head after demonetization happened, that this government was prone to some fanciful ideas. Because demonetization was like WhatsApp economics.
Right.
Somebody sends you a WhatsApp, demonetization kar do, black money khatam ho jayega. Nothing happened. So I must say they learned quickly and they came back. The second, on the economic side, again, I would say, is that they again reopened the idea of privatization.
Mm.
They might not have been able to do very much as yet, but more will happen.
Mm.
So the idea that privatization of PSUs is a good idea is a very good thing. The third thing that's happened in the country is that the direction that India's foreign policy had taken, say 1991 onwards, because 1990 the Cold War ended, by 1991 Cold War was completely over. So India started shifting its foreign policy from being caught in fake non-alignment, because we were supposedly non-aligned, but we were inclined heavily towards the Soviet bloc. So the Soviet bloc was no longer there, but still there was a lot of inertia in the system when it came to moving westwards, to shifting. So every prime minister since then has done his bit. This prime minister has done more than other prime ministers, although lately we've seen it struggle a little bit. Government has equivocated a little bit, but that's also necessary, because Russia is not a country that India can just dump like that. But I would say that is a positive as well. So these are the positives.
You just mentioned foreign policy, and Aman Birthal, another one, you know, our members, he wants to know how India's foreign policy has changed under the current minister S. Jaishankar, especially during Russia-Ukraine war, or is it a short-term highlight that India is getting?
Look, under Dr. Jaishankar, India's foreign policy, basically the direction is the same that's been set, and that's a good thing, because good direction was set under Narasimha Rao in 91, then Vajpayee took it forward, and then Manmohan Singh pretty much kept it there because he signed the nuclear deal.
Right.
So that was a big shift. It was a big shift of global significance for India. But in Jaishankar's times, the articulation of that foreign policy to global audiences, but more importantly to domestic audiences, has become much better and much sharper. So that is the big change. I don't think there is any fundamental shift in foreign policy. Yes, there is some fundamental shift in through some decisions that are linked to foreign policy. For example, change in the constitutional status of Kashmir. So that, in terms of international implications, is, I would say, about 30% as significant as Vajpayee carrying out the nuclear tests in 1998. Then those invited sanctions, and India then had to get out of the sanctions, which was very skillfully done. But this was done at a time when India was in a kind of a sweet spot. And that is the big shift which had implications on foreign policy.
So Michael Ivey wants to know, have the chances of some kind of India-Pakistan rapprochement increased or decreased in the wake of Imran Khan's fall and the start of the Sharif administration?
Well, whether the chances of India-Pakistan rapprochement have increased or declined, that depends on how you define rapprochement.
Right.
If you think that once again there'll be a summit meeting and there'll be a settlement of all our problems, that's not going to happen. I'm still hoping it'll happen in my lifetime, but I've been hoping for a long time. So I don't know when that will happen, if that can happen. But certainly, if India and Pakistan resume trade,
right,
that to me is rapprochement. That might sound a minimalistic expectation, but that's rapprochement. Today, Pakistan is in desperate need of wheat. Why should it be buying, searching the world markets looking for wheat? It can buy from India. Very often you will find simple things like potatoes, tomatoes, nimbu right now. It's very expensive in one country, not so in the other. Onions,
right.
Cement, right? Power. There are times when India has excess power. Right now, India has excess power, funnily, because our states don't have the money to buy any power, right? So a lot of our plants are working at low capacity. So India and Pakistan, even if we restore our trade, restore our full diplomatic relations, that is a huge rapprochement. And the chance for that has improved a great deal now with Imran Khan's departure. Because, you know, the disappointment with Imran Khan is not whether he was a hawk or a dove. By the way, I will tell you a story.
Yes.
Mr. Natwar Singh, who was our preeminent diplomat and also became foreign minister. Yes. So when he became foreign minister, later, I think if I remember correctly, maybe under Manmohan Singh's government, somebody asked him in a press conference that, are you a hawk or a dove? So he said, I am running a foreign ministry. I am not running a bird sanctuary. Right? So Imran Khan was not a hawk or a dove. He was stupid. Right? And so many of us had known that he is an instinctive cricketer. He's a great cricketer. But a great cricketer or a great cricket star or great film star doesn't right. automatically become a great politician or a great statesman. Mm. Because for that, you need one attribute, which is humility. You should be willing to say, "Ye mujhe nahi aata. I don't know this." I have never seen Imran Khan ever say, "Ye mujhe nahi aata." You see, he said he went to Kazakhstan. He says, "I know more about Kazakhstan than any of you, more than Kazakh people. I know more about India than anybody does. I know more about Britannia than anybody does." Hello, right? And then he made this famous gaffe, where he said that the British people like me so much, they wanted to adopt me as one of their own. But I'm a Pakistani, I wasn't going to become a Brit. Because, you know, gadhe ke upar agar aap lakeere khinchte, if you draw lines over a donkey, it doesn't become a zebra. Aap gadhe ke upar agar line khinchte, to zebra nahi banta, gadha to gadha rehta hai. An ass remains an ass. So who talks like that? I mean, it's not a statesman. He's not a funny guy. He was the prime minister of a country having nuclear weapons. So India-Pakistan relations have suffered from many reasons. It's a chronic problem. But lately, in the past year and a half or so, from Imran Khan's stupidity. Because he became obsessed with the idea that he was the leader of the Islamic world. Mm. So he began speaking a language which people were not expecting to hear from him. And that led to a lot of complications and complexities, because diplomacy, politics, international relations, they have to be rooted in real politics and right. the real situation on the ground, not in ideology. Having said that, you know, there was a member of ours who asked a question.
Yes.
And first of all members, please give us your names, because you know what? I'm telling you a secret now. All the members whose questions we have picked up today, and I'm sorry for those who got left out, because we can have only this many. Please send us your names and addresses. We'll be sending you a modest, humble gift hamper with a few things from us, just by way of saying thank you to you. So please don't forget. So he had asked the three
positives and
three negatives of Modi government. So three negatives. The biggest negative is Modi government's constant pushing at social cohesion in our country. So the beauty of our country and the success of our country lies in the fact that we've stayed not only together, but we've become stronger through the decades.
Right.
If you look at all the new nations that came into being, say through decolonization or after the Second World War, of all the diverse nations that came into being, all have broken up except maybe Tanzania in Africa and India. I would have said Indonesia, but even Indonesia saw East Timor break away. Small one, but still it broke away. But look at all of the world. All of the Soviet bloc broke up, right? It became so many republics out of the Soviet Union. Now, Putin is trying to put some of that back. And you know the consequences. The world is destabilized. Czechoslovakia became so many countries. Now there's Czech Republic and so many more. Slovakia, Again, if you go to the Balkans, Yugoslavia, it broke up into so many. Pakistan broke up into two. So almost every country that came into being after Second World War and through the process of colonization, decolonization broke up. India has not only stayed together, but has become stronger.
Right.
That's because we've learned to live with our diversity. We have learned to enjoy our diversity. So the biggest negative is trying to drive all of India in one direction, in trying to homogenize us, into trying to, we are a salad bowl. Every ingredient is different, but in trying to put us into a homogenizer, it comes out as one pulp. Wo is country ka kabhi nahi hone wala. And if you push at that, there'll be an immune reaction. And we are beginning to see some of that right now. So that is one negative. The other negative is, and which I worry about, is this whole obsession with Atmanirbharta. Because we've seen this movie before. And when we saw this movie before of protectionism, it was like a tragic Meena Kumari movie. So, ek bar maine article bhi likha tha, National Interest, the Meena Kumari politics, right? We were a country of crybabies constantly. That the whole world is against me. Arre, the whole world is our playground, right? We should play in the whole world. Why should only we play in India? So, this is nonsensical to say that I will not buy from you if it costs me 100 rupees, but I will have someone build it who will buy all the components in your country, come back and put them all together. He will sell it for 200 rupees. Then our consumers will buy for 200 rupees. And I will give you PLI, that is productivity linked incentive, of 100 rupees out of the taxpayer's pocket. That is catch 22.
Because we are being self-reliant.
Catch 22 economics. It's nonsensical. So I see this as the second big negative. And the third negative is just the damage that's been done to our center-state relations. See, people laughed at Rahul Gandhi when he said, we are a union of states. We are a union of states. The way he put it, maybe was not done with finesse, right? But you don't expect finesse from Rahul Gandhi. But the fact is that states have their own place in India. And today, say 2017, BJP ruled states which comprised of about 70% of India's landmass. Today, it's only 49%. So you have to constantly be dealing with the states. You have to constantly be trading space with them. But if you are not willing to do that, then centrifugal pressures come up. And we are beginning to see those now. And you see those now with the states filing criminal cases, including under sedition law against people from the BJP.
Also, Nishchay, he's one of our viewers. He wants to know, what changes and transformation did you observe or witness in this 1,000 episode journey regarding India with respect to society, polity or economy, which according to you stood out or was unique, you know, in its own sense? And I would just like to add that Prakash Sonkar, he's just taken a subscription on the eve of the 1,000th CTC. And he wants to know, what is the motivation behind your continuity?
Well, first of all, I can answer this first, Prakashji. Motivation is people like you who come to us. I know that there is a lot available, particularly on YouTube, that is maybe more fun, maybe more enjoyable, more entertaining. And I'm sure there's a lot of gyan available and a lot of people talk about politics and things. So we have a lot of competition. But when smart people like you come to us, that's our motivation. We need no other motivation. So thank you very much for being there. And what was the other question?
And Nishchay Wats wants to know, with respect to society, polity or economy, well, you know, the journey through those 1,000 episodes, what changes have you witnessed?
Well, I think the biggest thing is what has not changed. And what has not changed is the Indian resilience. So through two phases of the pandemic, we have seen that resilience remain. Threat from China, right? Lots have happened which could have shaken most countries. But India has handled it stoically and very strongly with a great deal of strength. That is one thing. The other thing is there is a sense of confidence that you see in some parts of India, a kind of Bangalorization of other regions of India. Although at the same time, there are worrying signs, particularly from the Hindi heartland, where there is so much joblessness. But at the same time, I see a new entrepreneurial energy, which is not confined, and this is particularly among the young, not confined just to Bangalore. This is now spreading out of Bangalore.
Well, I'll end our conversation with this very interesting comment from Prayukt. I'm just going to read it out. And he says, SG was in Mexico City when the asteroid that wiped out the dinos crashed in the Yucatan Peninsula 66 million years ago. SG and his photographer got an actual pic of the ejecta cloud and the 100-foot tsunami that followed. And then he quotes, the waters were so high that we didn't have to take a shower for 2 days. It is said that SG's new pair of glasses and his barely used comb, gifted by none other than L.K. Advani, who was in college then, are part of the KT boundary layer in the vicinity of a North Mexican city waiting to be excavated. SG was there to cover the arrival of the first members of the Homo sapiens group that left Africa and crossed the Red Sea to land in what is now Israel. SG had danced at that event. And when the Mahabharata war was on, SG was asked by none other than Duryodhan for doing an exclusive interview with him. Duryodhan had in fact asked SG to tell Yudhishthir that he planned to use a nuclear weapon in case the Kaurava army was beaten by the Pandava army. SG was also the only journo who has filed stories in 14 scripts, including Harappan. There is nothing that SG hasn't seen or heard. SG's biography is called A Short History of Time.
Well, thank you very much. That's very imaginative. So I can tell you, as someone who was trained to be a reporter and will always remain a reporter, I wish I could be present at all these, at all of these. But you have only one life. And I think in that one life, I've had a lot of interesting experiences, good and bad. And viewers, readers, you all stayed with us. Now, well, you got me thinking, for somebody who was trained to be a reporter, and once a reporter, always a reporter, no reporter likes to miss a good story. Every reporter hates missing a good story. So I hate the fact that I've missed all these great stories, and I wish I could be present at all of those. But you know what? You have one lifetime. It doesn't last millions of years for sure. So you do what you can do in one lifetime. And to that extent, I think I've had rich experiences so far. I've had the good fortune of being in lots of interesting newsy situations. These are all not all good situations,
right,
but interesting newsy situations. And I hope that part of my life continues. But yes, I do wish I was around 65 million years ago in Mexico City.
And as we wrap up this very special edition of Cut the Clutter, we would like to make an appeal to our subscribers. Do subscribe to The Print. We have exciting content on our YouTube channel. Do follow us on social media as well. And thank you so much for being part of this journey.
And if you want to take a paid subscription, the link is right here. So please click on the link and it'll take you right there.